in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this gets pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What's up, Bison fans, and welcome to your weekend edition of the Bison Report Radio Podcast. I am your host, Ross Uglum. We'll have Nate Zastro here coming up in just a little bit to talk about North Dakota State's big road dub over the Big West's Cal State Northridge and former NC State coach Mark Gottfried. And a little later on in the show, we're going to have Trevor Gebhardt here to break down the rematch between Illinois State and North Dakota State in the quarterfinals of the FCS playoffs. The first thing that we'd like to do is, as a show and certainly as a company at Bison Report, congratulate Trey Lance on being named the Jerry Rice Award winner, which makes him the top freshman in FCS football. Trey has always been very kind to us and very giving of his time. You've seen him a number of times on BRTV and on the podcast, and you know, he's just been such a excellent football player, really. First quarterback in FCS history to attempt at least 200 passes without an interception, a 25-0 TD INT ratio. The kid is playing ball at a higher level than any other Bison quarterback before him, and he is a freshman. So truly, truly unbelievable stuff. Also, congratulations out to Ben Ellefson. Baby Gronk got the Shrine Bowl invite. It's the same game that Easton Stick was at last year. A lot of Shrine Bowl invitees get selected, A, to go to the combine, and B, end up getting drafted. It is the top non-Senior Bowl All-Star game. Obviously, the number one place to go is the Senior Bowl, but beyond the Senior Bowl, the Shrine is number one. So for Ellefson to get that call, that's absolutely big time. We want to send our congratulations, as we said, out to Baby Gronk, because that is big time for sure. And any you know, designs that he has on playing football after college are only going to be helped by this news. He's going to go out there and compete, probably end up on the same team as his current teammate Derek Tuska, but that should be a really fun week of practice and a fun game. All right, Nate. 71-62 Bison. What were your just 80,000-foot view? What were your immediate takeaways from the Northridge game? I know you texted me really early on in the proceedings about how you were not necessarily impressed with their overall team defense.
Yeah, I mean, Northridge, you could tell they're a team that's just trying to find their way. I mean, you had three of their starters that played less than 20 minutes. I mean, Ron Artest's kid, now I'm at a world peace. I mean, his kid started, played 8 minutes. They had two kids off the bench play 31 minutes. Another kid played 20 off the bench. And defensively, I mean, they just weren't all there. You could tell they were lost. They didn't really show on screens. They didn't know when they were switching. But it was good. I think the Bison played really good basketball and found a way to win on the road. Northridge had two really good guards that could score the ball. I think they made things tough on them for most of the night. Terrell Gomez came in averaging 22 points a game, shooting 40% from the three. NDSU put a bigger defender on him in Tyson Ward, who's at 6'6". Gomez is only 5'8". And I think he really bothered him and set the tone from the start. I was really impressed with how Tyson played. Held him to 5-for-16 from the floor, 2-for-9 from the three to get his 16 points. If he's got to take 16 shots, that's where most of them were tough to get his 16, still holding them below his average, you're going to beat a Northridge team that's trying to find its way, whether it's at home or on the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And the clear, I think, star of the game, Vinny Shaheed, really impressive from Vin. Took 20 shots, but hit 10 of them, 6 of 10 for 3, perfect from the line, but still was able to, you know, fill out the rest of the stat sheet with 6 boards, two assists, two steals. Man, he really was the star tonight.
Yeah, Vinny really kind of, when NDSU had a couple dry spells there, it was pretty even for the start of the game. But he got to the basket. He hit pull-up jump shots. He scored off the screen and roll. He hit big shots, which is what Bison fans and probably that coaching staff expect out of him. It's what they're going to need from him going forward. He really had a solid game, and he had 20 shots, but he made 50% of them. We'll take that any day of the week, especially if he's 6-for-10 from the three. He's going to have the ball in his hands late shot clock, and I don't think we want anyone else to have that ball or trust anyone to have that ball than him right now. I mean, he's going to be a guy. He knows the time and score and situation. He's experienced, and he really showed some great leadership tonight. And congrats to him on a career high. I know you're going to look at Northridge's record at 2-9, but that's a game that we talked about. You just simply can't lose that game. You need to find a way to win that game, whether it's by 9 or it's by 1 or it's by 25. But it's good to get that win. Now let's get back home and get another one.
Well, I'm almost scared to look at the numbers because I think it's going to make me sad. But this is not a Bison program that over the last 5 years have achieved a bunch of non-conference road victories. Whether, you know, it's going out at a bye game and losing to USC or Arizona or Iowa State or whatever, but even mid-major road games have not gone particularly well. And flat out, this is just a program and a team that needs to win road games. And so I don't care if it's 2-9 Cal State Northridge. I don't care if it's 0-11 or 1-10 Chicago State. They need to find a way to win these games. And the other thing that I was really impressed with was their ability to respond. Coach Richmond talks about it all the time, basketball being a game of runs. He had 22-22, 5:46 left in the first half. Northridge doesn't score again until the, you know, like the 118 mark, and they go on a big time drought as NDSU stretches out that lead going into half. Then Northridge comes storming back and gets within one at the 8:58 mark, and then you see another really long scoring drive until the 5:12 mark, where the Bison had already stretched things back out to 9, and then, you know, Cal State Northridge cuts it to 7, but it never gets any closer. And more often than not, Vin was the guy, but the closer tonight was Rocky Cruiser with his unbelievable off-balance three as the shot. I thought that ended the game. That was my opinion. I thought that ended the game. But also his ability to, and this is a lot harder than it looks, his ability to make strong catches when Northridge was using ball pressure and finish with dunks. One was an and one. One was, you know, just a dunk. But that full court press, there are, not every big guy just takes that 35-foot pass and catches it strong and dunks the ball.
Yeah, I mean, NDSU did a really great job, especially late in the game against pressure. They did go to a little bit of a smaller lineup. I think they had Cam, Jared, Vinny, and Tyson in there with Rocky, and those four guards did a really good job moving the ball. And good for Rocky. He caught those things. He wasn't thinking, okay, we're going to hold it. He had a layup and a dunk, and he went up strong and confident and went up and finished it. He played a really solid game. That shot was pretty unbelievable. I think they cut it to 6 or 7 there. We're kind of making a little run, and he hit that, and that kind of took the wind out of their sails. You could tell they never really got close after that. You could tell that it was a game that Coach Richmond really wanted to make sure that they won this game. I mean, he played 6 guys, 26.
This is Richmond ball.
26 or more minutes. And then, I mean, Witts played 6, Harden Hayes played 4, and Notek played 9. So, I mean, he really went 6 deep to make sure that they got this win because he knew how important it was. Northridge is a team that they are a little bit scary because they can score the ball. They may not defend the way that most teams should, but all of a sudden NDSU gets in one of their shooting droughts, which we've seen at points early on in the season, and their Northridge is at home, a confident team, and you never know what could happen. So it was good to make some plays down the stretch. Vinny had some big shots, big free throws. Rocky had some good finishes, and Tyson's defensive effort throughout the whole game on Gomez really, really bothered them, and it was great to get a road win.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that about the – minutes distribution, because the number one thing I feel like we talked about going into this season was depth. Now, they're missing Sam Griesel, and that was another reason this was a big win, because Sam does a lot of stuff for this team, and I think if you have Griesel in there, then I think both Edie and Samuelson are in, you know, that lower to mid 20s for minutes, and you have things a little bit more spread out. But Chris Quayle gets no run at all. Very little for Witts, 6 minutes, 0 for 1 from the field, a couple of boards, a couple of fouls. Harden Hayes, Notek gets significant runs at least with 9 minutes played, but 35 from Vinny, 32 from Cam. Just a lot of minutes for guys that are, not necessarily this season used to logging those. These are, you know, like I said, this is Richmond ball. This is when, you know, Lawrence Alexander averaged 39 and a half minutes a game his senior year, that looked a little bit like that. And like I said, when Griesel comes back, no matter what, Richmond's at least going to feel like he has seven. Witts will come in no matter what, eventually, you know, as that eighth guy. But Harden Hayes, Notek, Quayle, they're still fighting. And they're going to have to try and scrape their way into or back into this rotation.
Yeah, I mean, they do have depth, and we know that they have depth. They have time and situations for each guy, and there's going to be moments in the year where I'm sure Richmond's going to use a kid like Chris Quayle. There's going to be moments where kids are going to get different kinds of runs in different games. You got your kind of main 6-7-ish once Sam comes back, probably 7 when Sam comes back. You kind of ride those 7 and find 2 or 3 in a certain game that are going to give you something. You see what they do in the first half. They give you a little something. You give them a little run in the second half. But I don't know if we're to the point where he should tighten that rotation down to 7-8 yet. I think that can be a big advantage, especially when they get into the dog days of February and Summit League play, where you're on the road traveling in cold weather all over the place. You're going to want to use that depth, because not many teams have 8-9 guys that can play like NDSU does, and I think that's a big advantage for them.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is, and it was going to be one of the big advantages as far as being able to get up and down the floor. If they wanted to play at a little bit higher pace than they have in the past, that was going to be available to them. One guy that was really playing at a high level that Richmond was basically forced to throttle his minutes down because of foul trouble was Tyson Ward. He got the Gomez assignment. Gomez still had 16 points, but on 16 shots. That's what if you have 16 points on 16 shots, you have to feel pretty good about the defensive job that you did, especially forcing two turnovers. Really, I think a struggle for Northridge, that likes to play up in the 80s, to end up with 62. But Ward was the primary defender on Gomez. I think he did a really good job defensively, and was just, he has been, and I've been trying to kind of figure out a historical comp for him. He's reminded me this season a little bit of like Brett Winkleman, a little bit of Taylor Braun, but not quite at that level. And maybe a little bit of Corey Brown, but more gifted offensively. He's just stat stuffing. You know, he's not every night does he have 20, but he's got, you know, every other statistic in the box score, he is contributing. So, you know, ends up with 9 boards tonight. Like I said, limited minutes, only 28 minutes, 12 points, 9 boards, ends up with 3 steals as well, or excuse me, 3 assists as well. Has been able to get steals in previous games. I believe he had 2 or 3 steals against ETSU. Tyson has really been the senior leader that they've needed over the last 2 games.
Yeah, I think Richmond's kind of, he said he had a little conference after that Indiana State game. I'm sure he talked to a bunch of players about their roles. Tyson's the type of kid where there's going to be a game where, hey, Tyson, go get 20. We're going to find a matchup in the post. We need you to score. There's going to be a game like tonight. Tyson, we need you to shut down their best guard, who's averaging 22 points a game. And he still did a great job of taking that defensive energy that he spent on that end to, get out on the break and get a couple layups, get a couple offensive rebounds and get some putbacks. They really kind of took away his left hand in the post, which he kind of struggled with that a little bit. But teams are going to do that. He's really good in transition, and if he can embrace that role of being just the one guy, because like you said, he can play a variety. He can be a defensive stopper, scorer. He can hit the three. He can do a lot of different things. If he can embrace that role of just going out and doing what the coaches need him to do on a game-by-game basis instead of worrying about him being the star of the game, he can be the insider star that people like us see. Like tonight, no one's really going to notice his stat line of 12-9 unless it's us who watched him shut down their leading scorer who scored 22 points a game coming into the game. His length really, really bothered him. And even when he came out, I thought Jared did a great job on Gomez as well. He doesn't quite have the length that he did, but he really got into him, and they did a really good team effort of just forcing him in some bad shots. He's going to get his eventually. He's going to find ways to score, but 5 for 16 and 16 points, I mean, you'll take that any day of the week.
Oh, absolutely. And that was, you know, what we talked about was the kid was going to get his, and 16 points isn't getting locked up, you know, but on 16 shots, it kind of is. And that was big time from Tyson. I'd love to see that kid really round out an offensive performance. He's had excellent performances in the past, but you see, in my opinion, like these evolutions of Tyson Ward. When he was a freshman and early on in his sophomore year, he was pretty much just transition and shooting threes and not getting to the rim. Then he started to get to the rim sophomore, junior year. Then late junior year, he became this post player. And it seems like when he adds a new wrinkle, you know, the other ones go away a little bit. I'm not, you know, 100% locked in on his 3-point field goal percentage this season, but I don't think it's been great. Oh my goodness. There it is. 15.8%. He's not hitting from outside at all this year. So I would just like to see that outside shot go a little bit, because if the outside shot starts going, he's going to open things up for himself with the ability to, you know, potentially get to the rim a little bit easier. And you know, 37% from three as a freshman, he can shoot it, guys. This is not a player that struggles shooting it from outside. It just hasn't gone yet, but at some point it's going to go for sure. Nate, do we want to touch on Montana State at all, or do we feel confident that we're going to get in a pod before they tip on Monday?
We'll get one in. They're playing really well right now. They've got a couple.
Yeah, they are.
They've got a couple good wins here recently. I know they beat South Dakota State. They got a good returner in Harold Frey. I think he's averaging about 16, 17 a game. Definitely going to be a guy. It's probably going to be another Tyson matchup right there, but we'll see what happens there. I'm not sure who they have coming up. I haven't looked at them too much. I've tracked their games that they've played, but I believe they're 6 or 7 and 4. So they're going to be a good mid-major matchup. Obviously, you want to take care of the Big Sky in your home court. That's another mid-major game that we've talked about that's huge for seeding. Montana State's going to be up there in the Big Sky this year. So that would be a big win to get at home.
Yeah, they won the Spartan Invitational. That's where they got three of their wins. Beat Appalachian State by 3, beat UNC Greensboro by 1, and have kind of been a little bit up and down over the last couple weeks. Got beat by 13 at Grand Canyon, though that's a pretty darn good mid-major. Then beat a non-D1 and absolutely got throttled at home by Wisconsin Green Bay, who I don't think is any good, but they lost by 26 at home, giving up 98 points to Wisconsin Green Bay. Then they host the Jacks, who honestly, we don't know anything about the Jacks, really. True, and I mean that. I mean, this is a completely flipped roster. The coaching staff obviously knows Hendo plenty, but we don't know a ton about the Jacks. They beat the Jacks by 7 at home. That's a lot different than playing the Bison on the road. So big-time matchup on Monday, a chance for NDSU to get to 8-4. Remember, this club finished 19-16 a year ago. They did win the league, but these are big-time games as far as your final record, whether you get to 23, 24, 25, 26 wins, or you're, you know, in that middle ground where you end up as a 15 or a 16 seed. Obviously, nobody is taking the conference tournament for granted, but if you do win that, you want to be in the best position possible. All right, buddy, Nate, I appreciate it. We're going to hit Trevor just on the other side of the break.
Clients often ask me how to save money on their homeowners insurance. I'm Ross Uglum, a Nodak Insurance Company agent in Fargo. My clients are often surprised when I tell them this. If your home was built in the last 10 years, you can qualify for discounts of up to 40%. Give me a call and find out how much you can save. Nodak Insurance Company is focused on serving the people in the great state of North Dakota with agents who care and provide the answers you need to your doorstep.
Ross Uglum, one of the agents with answers from Nodak Insurance Company.
Joining us now is Bison Report football analyst Trevor Gebhardt to break down this weekend's big quarterfinal matchup with Illinois State. Illinois State, of course, a team that North Dakota State played earlier in the season, a Valley team, and one that they beat 37-3, by the way, on the road. I got to ask you, Trevor, because it's been bugging me all week. When you go into someone's house and you beat them 37-3, and then their starting quarterback blows out his knee, how do you convince yourselves as a football team to take them seriously?
It's, I mean, it's the same thing we've been really reiterating throughout the whole playoffs here. It's just they're the next team up and they're your next task at hand. And in order to get to where your ultimate goal is, you have to beat them again. And I brought it up in our last pod, but look at South Dakota State. Now, granted, they played Northern Iowa at home both times, but they had outscored the Panthers something like 40-something to 10, or I can't even remember the exact number, but UNI outscores them 10-0 in one half of football out of eight quarters that they've played this year, and they're still playing, and SDSU sitting at home, and that's all it takes. And that's the good and ugly of the playoffs. It's what creates the drama, and it's what gets people so excited about it, is anything can happen. So we've said it over and over and over this season. The dude factor in James Robinson, with him being on the field, his presence is large. So when you have a guy like that, the NFL caliber talent that James Robinson brings to the table, you could chalk it up to any given Saturday type game. I don't foresee that happening, and you'll see that in my prediction later on, but it's one of those things where they happen to find themselves in the position that they're in, and it just goes to show the strength of the Valley. So getting your guys geared up based off how they performed coming out of the gates last week against Nichols, I think is all the fire you need, despite the fact you're playing a team you've blasted by 34 earlier in the year.
So let's talk about the, you know, the 800-pound gorilla in the room, which is James Robinson. It's the first name on the tip of everyone's tongue, and it's not that he wasn't a good player before, but as you mentioned, Brady Davis blew out his knee. It was a really wild injury, just basically riding the mesh on an option or on an RPO, and he just crumpled. Non-contact, I mean, he absolutely just crumpled. And ever since that happened, this has gone from being James Robinson's show to really being James Robinson's show. So here is last four games, Trev. 29 carries, 155 yards. Then they go out to Youngstown, 22 carries, 82 yards. So not a, you know, a big time James Robinson game. But then here are Illinois State's playoff performances. 41 carries for 297 yards at SEMO, followed by 37 carries for 210 yards at Central Arkansas. That, as wild as it sounds, is over 500 yards of rushing offense in two playoff games. Now, it's not like he's doing it on 20 carries. You know, he did it on 80 carries, but that is putting the team on your back.
Oh, well, quite literally. That SEMO performance, I think he broke a few records within there. Anytime you get 297 yards, you're bound to break a record somewhere in there. I think the last time I had seen a rushing performance of that nature was Terrence West against Eastern Illinois.
Yeah.
Like something like 350. Yep. It was a snow game, kind of a weird day. Eastern Illinois wasn't known for their defense that year. They had a guy taking snaps by the name of Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't know what he's doing now, but
never heard of him.
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing. Hopefully he's doing well. So
handsome guy.
I can't say he's bad looking. Yeah, James Robinson, he has that type of, weaponry in his arsenal that Terrence West did. And Terrence West led his team all the way to the national title. Now, granted, Terrence West eventually faced a North Dakota State defense that held him in check, something like 63 yards that year, the national title game. But
Grant Olsen tackling him with his knee held together by duct tape.
That was unbelievable. Shout out to G Money. I hope he's listening. I just 41 carries, 37 carries. He's going to get 40, if not close to 40. Holding him in check to under 100 is going to be very tough. That's just the nature of giving him the ball that many times. But the thing of it is when you're doing this week after week after week, when your backs are against the wall, it's a one and done situation. You're that one dimensional. Eventually your sword's going to break. And I think coming into the Fargo Dome, I think the task is probably just a little bit too tall for one guy to handle. I wish him the best of luck though. I mean, James Robinson, I think he's a phenomenal player. I think he would be a guy that would represent the Valley well at the next level. I certainly don't want to see him selfishly rush for 297 on Saturday, like he did at SEMO. Yeah. But
give Ents a stroke.
Oh yeah, I mean that would be kind of horrifying. Now, if he was held to one touchdown, that could help some things. But yeah, I mean he's gonna get the ball very often. I would say on a 3-play drive, that ball is coming to him 2.75 times. So it'll be interesting to see how they scheme it up. I would imagine there's some trick plays in there because Brock Spack and company, there's no way that they fully believe they can win the game being that one-dimensional. It's just the reality of it. So I'm sure they'll get creative early as well. But at the end of the day, 2-5 is going to be your go-to guy.
He is, and you know, even if, and you talk about one-dimensional, I'm going to talk about just exactly how one-dimensional they've actually been. He has an okay day against the Bison. Let's say he runs it 35 times for 150 yards. If Illinois State only throws it for 50, they're going to lose the game if they have 200 yards of offense. And that's really what we're talking about with Bryce Jefferson. He gets into the Missouri State game after the Davis injury, throws one pass, it's picked off. Then Youngstown State, the season on the line, end of the year Valley game, 2 for 7 for 23 yards and a pick. At SEMO, 4 for 7, 52 yards and a touchdown, at least no pick. UCA, 6 for 11 for 75 yards. Now, he did run the ball 6, 7, and 7 times, including scoring a touchdown against SEMO, but that was only for 22, 20, and 16 yards. So is he more athletic than Brady Davis? Sure. Is he Trey Lance? No. Is he Taryn Christian? No. I'm not even sure he's Keaton Heidi, you know, the kid that came in and did the quarterback run stuff in Brookings. This is a situation, and I know that North Dakota State loves to play their base defense and just, you know, run their normal checks and do all the things that they normally do, because 95, 98, 99% of the time, that's good enough. I don't think I need to see two high safeties this entire game. I think I need to see 8 in the box. I think you can certainly get away with putting Josh Hayes, in man-on-man coverage. Coach Ents mentioned they got their big-time receiver back that was not playing against them last time in Andrew Edgar. But, you know, he had 2 catches for 20 yards last week, and I can't imagine the week prior against SEMO went all that much better when you look at Bryce Jefferson's stats. So if you want to match up Hayes on Andrew Edgar and play 8 in the box all day, I think that has to kind of be the defensive strategy. Do you expect a lot of two shell from Tutsi and Hendricks? I just don't see
it. No, it's going to be man all day. I don't. You got. I'm looking back at the NDSU game earlier in Normal. So James Robinson rushed for 5.6 yards a carry. If you equate that out to a
not bad,
yeah. If you equate that out to carrying the ball 40 times a game, he rushed the ball 20 times last time against NDSU. It's like 200 and change that he'll rush for. But like you said, great numbers, and kudos to him. And it just goes to show how talented he is. You can't be that one dimensional, and that's, you know, that Brady Davis injury is going to come back to haunt him, unfortunately for the Redbirds. But even being said, you can't expect one guy when you know he's going to get the whole load to defeat a whole football team. That's where depth comes into play, and we saw that last week. And so I'm expecting almost 9 in the box at some points. I don't know what type of personnel they run, especially given that they're, you know, Edgar's back and what type of receivers they're going to run. I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to throw a wrinkle and came out 4 wide the first drive just to give themselves a shot that NDSU has to go to the sideline and adjust to that as opposed to scheming up James Robinson more. So that's their only way of doing it. But even being said, they're going to have to try to spread it out, give the ball to 25, and say, hey, you got to beat 6 guys. He will be able to do that. He is that good. But to take that and propel your team to a victory is a whole nother thing. And I think another thing about this game is we've seen it 1,000 times. It's been the script over and over and over again for the last decade. The best defense is a good offense. And so Trey Lance and company, they're going to run the ball a lot themselves. The best way to limit James Robinson's touches and the best way to limit his yards and the best way to limit his chance at knocking off the Bison is by keeping him off the field. So I would expect that T-Roll has heavy run in the first 10 plays, scripted up, and I would imagine there's a play action in there for either number 1 or 11 to run by a couple guys.
Yeah, I would guess that there is, and that's something, too, that I wanted to talk about, because if you go back and watch just the game flow, not necessarily watch the tape, but just watch the game flow out in Normal, and this is something BRTV with Aaron Mercadell is already up. I would guess that by the time you guys listen to this on Friday morning, there's a second BRTV up. But this week we had Jabril Cox, we had Merck, we had Matt Beagler, and then we have my guy Phoenix Hollywood Sproles on the show. So we have some awesome video for you guys this week. But what we talked about, both with the defensive guys and the offensive guys, was the offense's duty this week. And what the offense's duty this week is to get up 17. Because once you get up 13, 14, 17 points, James Robinson becomes almost a self-fulfilling prophecy, a self-defeating issue. If you're down 3 scores, handing the ball to your back, especially in the second half, is extremely dangerous for you from a chance of winning the football game aspect. And what I mean by that is when you're running the ball, this is basic football. I'm not teaching you guys anything you don't know. Teams that are behind throw the ball. It's look at Philip Rivers' entire career. The guy has made a statistical career out of being down in the fourth quarter and either making the comeback or most of the time tragically not making the comeback. But the goal for the NDSU offense is to create space in between Illinois State and North Dakota State that puts the game in Bryce Jefferson's hands, because so far the Redbirds have just not proven that that's a good place for the ball. I mean, he, you know, has not reached double-digit attempts, has not reached triple-digit yards. The kid's just not ready. And so if you are up 17 late in the third quarter, up 20, up 28, whatever, in the fourth quarter, turning around and handing the ball to James Robinson and having the clock run every, you know, just continuously is really milking, it's strangling yourself. It's milking out the rest of the game. It's playing exactly into North Dakota State's hands. And that is, in my opinion, the number one goal for the offense is to jump out ahead of Illinois State.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there, because when you're that one-dimensional, you can't make a comeback, especially if the guy throwing the rock is not even proven to throw more than one or two touchdowns a game. It's the nature of the beast, and it's the unfortunate part of them incurring the Brady Davis injury. And a lot of times in FCS football, the unfortunate part of the depth of a team. So it's just, I mean, Illinois State has had some bad luck. They've had a really good run here, and it just goes to show the prowess of the Missouri Valley Football Conference, because they had what, two receivers go down earlier in the year. I think one was one before the season started.
Not, I don't think it was necessarily before the season started, but it was before the NDSU game, and it was a big talking point going into that game was just how one-dimensional they were going to have to be because of how good those receivers were and how they were just going to end up locked in to.
And that was with their starting quarterback. So it's just.
Right. With their starting quarterback, without the receivers, Andrew Edgar's back this week. I'm not saying that that's going to define the game or really even change the game, but that's just what the deal is.
That one dimensional, you're on the road 3-4 weeks in a row. These guys have been playing some tough football. It's just unfortunate that the Valley teams are always matched up. You know, again, they didn't have a bye, and eventually you're going to run into those teams the more you win. So, I think it's – we even joked about it beforehand. It's like, hey, guys, we could talk about James Robinson and then be done with the pod within 2 minutes. And it's really kind of the never-ending topic, because that's what it's going to come down to. You stop him, or you even hold him below 200 yards, it's over.
And that's, you know, that's the number that we keep talking about, which is that, you know, if he rushes for 150, he rushes for 170, and they throw it for 70. 250 yards of offense, 240 yards of offense is not going to be enough to beat the Bison. It's just not with the way that Trey Lance is playing, not with the way that they're running the ball. And I think most importantly for this, the version of this year's team, not the way the offensive line is playing. Those guys are, you know, at that level, in my opinion. And the big guys you need to pay attention to, just from a name perspective on the defense, Luther Kirk, a defensive back who's leading the team in tackles. He's also got 6 pass breakups and 3 sacks. He's a really, really good kind of safety, kind of hybrid guy. We talked about Ty DeForest, who is the kind of do-everything linebacker for them. And then Romeo McKnight, just have to keep him away from Trey Lance. It's a big-time matchup for Cordell, a big-time matchup for Dylan if he heads over there. But that's a 12-sack, 16.5 tackle for loss type of guy. They've got some dudes on defense. I mean, that's kind of the calling of a Brock Spak team. You think Brock Spak, Ants won't say this, I will. You think Brock Spak, you think what? You think FBS transfers exactly and defense.
Trey Roberson was an FBS transfer, who, of course, was their quarterback in 2014, my senior year, when we played them in the national title game. Yeah, exactly.
Handing off to an FBS transfer.
That's his formula, and that's his model, and he's made it work. I mean, Illinois State has been a good program. They've made it to a national title game. They've won a couple of Valley titles, albeit split with the Bison. So they've been an upper echelon program for a good while here, and he's made it work. It's just not the formula for winning a title, in my opinion, especially this year when you got it. We got just one guy that is really it as far as being able to propel your team forward.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've got to tell you, unless they're not really listing them on the roster the way that they normally do, just whipping through this roster quick, I'm not seeing the Brock Spak level of transfers that I normally do. Again, they just might not list him on the roster anymore. Maybe he got a little bit sensitive about everybody, you know, talking junk about all the transfers that he's taking, but you see fewer, at least on first glance, from what I'm looking at. All right, Trevor, let's wrap this baby up. Where are you at from a
prediction standpoint? This one's one of the tougher ones we've had. I mean, usually we're in the general vicinity. You know, we've nailed a couple.
Last week got away from us a little bit.
Sort of. I mean, it ended up being fairly close. I mean, kind of a stretch to make it close, but when you kind of look at the end score and look at the score predictions that we had, that wasn't fairly off. It's just how
you were off by four. I was off by eight, I think.
Yeah, the flow of it was just way different than we expected. We thought the gas pedal would be off in the second half. But so what I did to come up with my score prediction this week, I went back and looked at all the quarterfinal matchups this decade. And it's because, and the reason being is because of the time of the game. So traditionally, this game we have been playing in the morning, 11 a.m., breakfast with the Bison on ESPN. So I went and looked at them, and I'm just going to read them off here, okay? Out of these, you're going to see two single-digit spreads. So we had 24-0, 14-7, 48-14, 39-32, which was close to Carolina the second go-around, 23-13, 36-10, 42-10, and 35-RIP, which was Colgate last year. So you had two single-digit performances, Wofford, as far as differentiation in the score, that is. So you had Wofford in 2012 was 14-7, and then the Coastal Carolina in 2014, that was 39-32. I don't foresee that happening as far as it being in the single digits, just with the sheer nature of the matchup and also the sheer nature of the preparation and what we do for these morning games. I think what we do is phenomenal. I won't go into detail because I'll take another 20 minutes, but I think we're going to see something similar to the first matchup. So I am going to go Bison 38, Redbirds 10.
Yeah, I'm right around there. I'm going to go with 7. I think their offense is that limited in this game, but I think 35-7. I'm not sure. NDSU kicks a field goal. I'm not sure Entz is comfortable kicking a field goal, though I believe Griffin Crosa will be back. I just don't see a one-dimensional, and I mentioned before, a little bit concerned about the play of the defensive tackles against Nichols, but ultimately I think they turn it around this game. They played fine against Robinson out in Illinois. I see 35-7, which, you know, if you're paying attention in Nevada, would be I believe a cover. So that's where we're at. Trev and I both predicting big time NDSU wins. Guys, if there is any way that you can support Trevor and I in this venture, it's to become a VIP member over at the Bison Report. Right now, you can try a month of our VIP stuff with National Signing Day coming up. I can't think of a better time. Plus, you'd end up getting our Frisco coverage, which, you know, is going to be tremendous. It was tremendous last year. It'll be tremendous again for $1. Otherwise, an annual subscription is going to be 30% off. Guys, thank you one more time, and go Bison.